A new poll conducted for the Australian Institute found that just 1 in 7 women aged between 18 and 34 believe that doctors always take their concerns seriously, with majority saying they often felt dismissed. In a survey by YouGov, around 1,500 Australians were asked how helpful their doctors were in developing the right treatment options, with women reporting consistently worse experiences than the average Australian. The Wire's Taylor Viskich spoke with Sky Predovic, researcher at the Australian Institute, to find out more.
There's a few big things that can come behind medical misogyny. The most obvious one is the thing that it might sound like on its face, which is prejudices underlying how two people interact with each other. The GP might feel like women's pain is being exaggerated or that they're hysterical or other kind of underlying misogynistic biases which kind of run through our society. But there's also factors like how they're taught at medical school, as well as even more systemic factors. For a long time, medicine was working with the assumption that clinical trials and other studies could only use male subjects and that could be applicable to everyone. And those biases, those systemic biases, still run through a lot of medicine.
You also highlighted previous reports on gender bias in Australia have been conducted by the National Women's Health Advisory Council in 2023, and the Royal Australian College of Medical Practitioners have also raised concerns. I suppose, why is this something we're still questioning?
Mainstream media studies and government reports have all identified this as a really serious problem, as you say. But we still aren't at the point where we've identified this as a problem so extensively that we have a quick fix to solve it, or that we have a way of actually dealing with this that is definitely working yet, because it is such a big problem. It's so systemic as well as so individual. So the more research we can do, and this was one of the big points of this, to identify where this problem really is taking place, as well as making sure that this is an issue that people are still thinking about, because it still exists.
How are these experiences of gender bias being further compounded in marginalized communities?
One of the really big things that's interesting when you look at this stuff is how much, if you're disabled or queer or a person of color, how much this compounds again the feeling of not being taken seriously, but also potentially the danger of not being taken seriously.
What specific changes by government and peak bodies to education or policy are required to address this issue?
Really ensuring that women's health is valued and making sure that there's proper funding for women's medical research and just more broadly, women's healthcare. So when we look at things like endometriosis, for example, it's something where most women end up seeking private healthcare in order to skip the queue for hospitalizations or self-funding it. That speaks to a lack of prioritization and a lack of funding. And in a country with a serious gender pay gap, it's a real barrier for a lot of women. So making sure that those areas are better funded and better prioritized is one really important thing.
Health advocate, performer, and author Libby Traynor Parker lives with endometriosis. She says she is unsurprised by the report's results.
I was diagnosed at 36 with endometriosis, and I first presented with symptoms when I was a teenager. So it took around about 22 years to get diagnosed. And all of the time when I was trying to go to doctors and say, I've got this pain, they kept saying that it was in my head, that it was anxiety, that it was depression. I was told to quit my job, break up with my boyfriend. And I remember going to hospital with like severe debilitating pain, and I collapsed on the floor of the doctor's surgery. They sent me off to get my appendix taken out. The doctor came in after that operation and said, oh, look, I just removed the most perfect pink squishy appendix. Nothing wrong with it. And I said, well, what's wrong with me then? He said, oh, you probably just got your knickers in a twist. And I was mortified because I thought, oh, I've just had this major surgery when obviously I'm worried about something. But it turns out it was actually real debilitating chronic illness.
What were the physical and mental consequences of having your pain or condition dismissed?
I started to think that every time I was in pain that it was anxiety or that I was worried about something. You start to overthink situations, which, you know, when you spend a lot of time trying to fix a head that isn't sick, sometimes it makes your head sick. In terms of physical ramifications, I had a lot of problem with fertility because I think, unfortunately, I wasn't diagnosed for so long. The damage was caused. And I do wonder whether if they'd taken me seriously, if I hadn't been dismissed so often, perhaps I would have been able to have my own child. I'm a foster mum and I'm a stepmum, so obviously I have my own children, but I was never able to carry a child to full term.
What specific changes to education or policy do you think are needed to address this issue?
I think that definitely policies need to change in terms of how we're funding healthcare and how long consultations are. In terms of education, we are educating young people. We are empowering young people. And I know there's a lot in a medical degree, but I think perhaps if we could have a little bit more education about patient care.
The Wire's Taylor Viskich speaking with Libby Traynor-Parker on her experience living with endometriosis.